The Best of Times Radio Hour, live on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel, a show dedicated to seniors and boomers in Northwest Louisiana. Here's your host, Gary Kaligas.
Good morning, radio listeners. I'm Gary Kaligas, the publisher of The Best of Times, the only magazine and radio show for mature adults in Northwest Louisiana. I do thank you for tuning into our show today, and also thanking those who might be listening via the internet at www.710kiel.com. Also thanking those who might be listening via the Kiel application on their Apple or Android devices. We do also want to thank those who might be listening via podcast. We have the podcast on thebestoftimesnews.com as well as Apple Podcasts. We thank the many, many thousands who have been listening to podcasts of previously broadcast radio shows here on the Best of Times Radio Hour. We do thank AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer for being the exclusive sponsors of this radio show to provide you with beneficial information each and every Saturday morning. In just a few minutes, we're going to discuss hearing loss and learn about the recent advances in the treatment of hearing loss. So stay tuned to our show to learn some important information for you and your loved ones. It is Saturday, November the 23rd, and we are broadcasting our show from the studios of News Radio 710 Kiel, a Town Square media station here in wonderful Shreveport, Louisiana. However, today's show has been pre-recorded, so we will be unable to accept call-in questions and comments from our loyal radio listeners. Be sure to pick up the November-December 2024 issue of The Best of Times at our 270 distribution locations throughout Northwest Louisiana. We do thank you for the many compliments that you send us about our magazine and our radio show. We do appreciate hearing from you. Remember, if you're unable to find a printed copy of our publication, you can always visit our popular website at www.thebestoftimesnews.com to view both current and past issues. We have over 8 years of issues on our website, and many, many people are viewing those particular issues in the past because they have great articles and great information. It is as I mentioned, you can listen to previously broadcast radio shows here on the Best of Times Radio Hour. In addition, you can download and view the 2024 Silver Pages Senior Resource Director, which is our most popular publication, as well as our most popular item that is viewed and downloaded from our website. We had over 50,000 website viewers to view the 2024 Silver Pages Senior Resource Directory. Each and every month, the Best of Times sends out a TBT newsletter via an e-blast over 73,000 email addresses of seniors and boomers located in Caddo and Bossier parishes of Louisiana. It provides them with a link to read our current issue online, but also to read the current Silver Pages. In addition, there are more educational articles that are not found in our printed magazine. In addition, we have discount coupons and a contest, and also additional news about upcoming events that might have not made into the printed magazine. Join the many thousands who are receiving our TBT newsletter just by giving us their email address. Just visit our website, thebestoftimesnews.com. Subscribe free to our TBT newsletter. Great news, our friends at Ernest Arlene's has brought back the Best of Times special dinner each and every Thursday from 4:30 p.m. to closing, with fabulous meals at highly discounted price, along with entertainment and, of course, free valet parking. It is highly recommended, due to the popularity of this Thursday night special Best of Times, to make advance reservations by calling 318-226-1325. Again, that 318-226-1325. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Kiel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM at 710 Kiel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. Joining me on my show today are some special guests is Dr. Gauri Mankekar. McKechnie close, an ENT physician, and Ms. Brooke Collins, who is a clinical audiologist with Ossner LSU Health in Shreveport. I've asked them to come on our show today to discuss hearing loss and the benefit of implanted or non-implanted hearing devices like cochlear implants. So thank you again for joining us today here on the Best of Times Radio Hour.
Thank you for inviting us.
Before we go into this, your experience, Dr. Gari, what's your experience? Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
So I did my residency in ENT in India and then a fellowship in Baton Rouge and New Orleans. I did my PhD in cochlear implants in Germany, and I've been here.
In Germany? Wow.
And I have been here at Ossner LSU for the last 5 years.
Well, we welcome you. We're glad you're in our neck of the woods here. That's really impressive when we get physicians with that kind of skills and experience come to our Shreveport and Bossier City area. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So, Brooke, tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience.
Sure. So I got my undergraduate degree at the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville in biology, and I actually also got my teaching license and was a teacher before. And then that is how I found audiology. I had a student in my class at the time that had a hearing loss. And then that led me to further my education and get my doctorate of audiology from Louisiana Tech University.
Great school. I'm a graduate.
Oh, great. So since then, I've been practicing as a clinical audiologist.
Well, that's good. You've got all the experience, but you also need to have a teacher experience in, yes, in teaching individuals how to use their devices.
Absolutely.
And also to tell them, you know, how to evaluate the hearing loss as well. So yeah, that's a great skill.
It does. It helps a lot.
Because I'm sure some audiologists never had that kind of background, so they have to adapt it, right?
Sure.
That's true.
Sure.
That true? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the causes of hearing loss.
So the causes can depend on the age of the person. It can range from infections or genetic or hereditary causes in a newborn baby, or if the mom is exposed to any infections during pregnancy. Simple causes can be just wax impaction in the ear or an injury to the ear or foreign bodies that are impacted in the ear. For example, you use a plug while swimming and the plug gets impacted in the ear. That can also cause a type of hearing loss. But infections in childhood, adults, you can get drainage from the ear, and these infections can also cause hearing loss. On the other hand, there are hearing losses that are nerve-related hearing losses and can be due to loud noise exposure.
I was going to ask you that.
And so today we are noticing more of these with all kinds of noise exposure in our lives. And as we get older, these exponentially increase. And so we see older adults who are living longer with profound hearing loss.
And I want to mention that, you know, young people, seniors and boomers like me back in the 70s and 60s listened to heavy music. Those of us who were in a band got to hear super heavy music. So, you know, that's why eventually I think I had to have hearing evaluations and, of course, hearing aids. But that was caused. So I want you to tell our listeners that's one way to prevent it. So, you know, you enjoy music, but you don't need to put it at, you know, 98 decibels, right?
Exactly. So it's it could be recreational loud noise exposure like music. And now with everybody listening to music with the headphones, that can increase the decibel loudness volume. But it's also occupational loud noise exposure. So, for example, aircraft mechanics who work near loud noise, or the ones who work in factories, and then hunting. If you go hunting, if it's one of your hobbies, then please use some kind of hearing protection. That's very important. So for everyone who is exposed to loud noise, either recreational or due to work, using hearing protection is the most important thing.
Good point. So tell our listeners, how is hearing loss diagnosed? This is an interesting, I have some comments after you mentioned this, but about this. Go ahead. So how is it diagnosed?
So to have a diagnosed hearing loss, you'll go to see an audiologist for a hearing test. And during that hearing test, They will look in your ears. They will play some tones for you. So that's when you think about people having a hearing test and they listen to the beeps and they raise their hand when they hear them. So that's a portion of the test. There's also a portion of the test that is looking at your speech understanding. So you'll be asked to say back words or sentences to the audiologist that is testing your hearing. And then through all of that, looking at the results, they'll be able to share with you what type of hearing loss that you have, if there is a hearing loss, and also ideas about the causes of that hearing loss.
Okay, interestingly. So before we go to that, I want you to explain to our listeners, because moi is one of them, I will tell my listeners, I was in denial. Isn't that a lot of people out there, even young and old, that they don't think, they're just people are not speaking loud enough, the music not turned up, the TV's not turned up, and it tends to get more and more, right?
Absolutely. On average, it actually takes individuals that have a hearing loss, on average, it takes them 7 years to come and see an audiologist and have their hearing tested to get an official diagnosis of hearing loss. It does. It takes people a while.
So both of y'all, tell our listeners out there, for their loved one, what can they notice that they might need to get a free evaluation?
So if you notice that your spouse is complaining about the loudness of the TV.
Loudness
of the TV.
Okay.
So you have your volume at the maximum. It's not because your spouse is speaking softly. It's because you probably have a hearing loss. And so it's very important to get tested. For kids, for example, if the parent notices that a child does not respond to being called, or if they go close to the TV and stand with one ear facing the TV to be able to listen, watch them closely. They may be having a hearing loss.
Interesting. Okay, that's a good one. The other thing that I think a lot of my listeners are not aware of, but hopefully the ones that are 7 years and so, do most family physicians and general physicians look in the ears and do a quickie screening of a person's patient?
Yes.
They're supposed to, right?
Yes, they are supposed to, and most of them do. They do look in the ear. They will notice the wax, and okay, they will refer to us, or some of them clean it themselves. But, yes, they do a quick exam of the ear.
And maybe they will suspect a particular hearing loss or something, right?
Well, you know, hearing loss is subjective, because unless the patient complains or the family complains, the physician in their quick exam may not notice the hearing loss. They may notice the issues in the ear. For example, there's a hole in the eardrum or there's drainage, and then may refer for a hearing test. But unless the patient themselves reveal that they have a hearing loss, it's difficult for a physician to decide that.
Okay. Well, Brookie, the other question, follow-up question about what happens during a hearing test, be sure to explain to listeners. I had one person that was adamant not to do it because she didn't want anything poked or invasive in her ear.
It's non-invasive at all. The most invasive part of it is probably just them looking in your ears, which they do, you know, quickly. They're just taking a peek, which is also important for your ear health because we want to make sure there's no occluding cerumen, which is so much earwax that it could actually, that could be causing the hearing loss.
Oh,
so
yeah,
we need to look at those things. And then when you're listening to those sounds and responding to the tones when you hear them and speech, you're wearing headphones or earbuds to present those sounds to you.
Okay, so what else can you tell us? So it's non-invasive.
It's non-invasive. It's very much a conversation. When you come in, your hearing care provider will also ask you things about how you feel like you're hearing, and you can express any concerns you have. It's very much a conversation. They're there to help you, and they want to be able to give you answers at the end of it.
So explain to our listeners, because I've been there, done that. Initially, when you do a hearing loss, you may not be a candidate for anything, right?
You might come in and you might actually have normal hearing. Sometimes patients come in to see me for difficulty hearing, and then maybe I do look in their ears and see they've got occluding earwax. So then I could send them to an ear, nose, and throat doctor or their pediatrician or their primary care physician. Lots of places we could send to get that cleaned out. But you might come in and you might not have a hearing loss at all. But if you're concerned at all, I would encourage you to come in and have it tested so you get an answer to that concern.
Okay. Well, what about the grandkids, the small kids that might have an ear infection and they're not hearing? That's treatable, right?
Yes. The ear infections are very, very treatable. And simple things like ear drops or antibiotics orally, that can help to resolve it. And so it's easy to diagnose, easy to treat. Okay. And so these are very preventable causes of hearing loss.
So, Doc, even if an older person like me gets an infection, it will curtail my hearing a bit.
Yes.
Maybe make ringing in the ears, but it's treatable.
It's not absolutely treatable.
So taking a hearing loss, hearing test wouldn't definitely help. You've already seen it's an infection, correct?
Exactly.
That's good. So how do you treat hearing losses? How do we treat it now?
So depending on the cause of the hearing loss, if it's wax, we clean it out in the clinic. If it's a drainage from the ear, it's an infection, so we'll give oral antibiotics and ear drops. When the hearing loss involves a hole in the eardrum, if it's a large hole, typically they will need surgery to repair it. Or if there's a cholestetoma, which is a type of skin infection that grows skin in the ear, those may need more involved surgeries.
So how does a person's ear get a hole in it, eardrum?
So recurrent ear infections will cause a hole in the eardrum.
I didn't know that.
And even after treatment, sometimes the hole will persist, and then they do require repair of the eardrum.
So it's not going to repair itself. You're going to have to suture it or do some stitches or something in there, or put glue.
Well, not exactly. Not glue, not stitches, but we have to just put a graft on it.
A graft on it, okay.
And the patient's own tissue and repair it.
Very small.
Very small. The ear is a very tiny place.
Very, very tiny. So what else, how else do we treat hearing loss?
So another way we can treat hearing loss is with devices. So there's lots of different devices that are available to help any age person with hearing loss, for a child up to an adult patient. And the type of device that would be recommended to help you is dependent on the type of hearing loss that you have, which would be known after you have a hearing evaluation or a hearing test.
So tell them that when you get this hearing evaluation, it's going to say you have mild hearing loss, intermediate, right on the level?
Absolutely. So it'll tell you the degree of hearing loss, which is mild, severe, profound, just the degree, how bad the hearing loss is. And then they'll also tell you the type of hearing loss.
What does that mean?
So we have three different types of hearing loss. We have what we call a sensory neural hearing loss, which is a permanent hearing loss of the hearing organ and the nerve. That's where the loss is. There's also a conductive hearing loss. And what that means is that there's an issue somewhere in the ear around maybe the eardrum or the little ear bones you have in your ear, and the organ of hearing is working good, but there's something preventing the sound from getting to that organ of hearing. So that's called a conductive hearing loss. We also have what we call a mixed hearing loss, is when someone has a combination of both sensory neural and conductive. So you have an issue in that hearing pathway at two different places.
So your hearing test determines whether it's one or the other or both.
Yes, and based on that, we can make a recommendation on the type of the device that will help you the best.
Okay, so the devices include?
So we have hearing aids, which I think is the most common that people hear about. Mm-hmm. We have hearing aids. We have bone-anchored hearing systems.
Explain that.
So that is a little bit different from a hearing aid. The bone-anchored devices are more so for the people that their hearing organ is working well, but there's something else preventing the sound from getting there. That's one of the ways that we could use that device to help someone with that type of hearing loss. I like to think about it like if you hold a hearing aid in your hand, there's a speaker on there that makes things louder. And if you lift a hearing aid to your ear, you'll be able to hear that sound and that volume. But this bone-anchored hearing device that we're using sends in sounds to the bone through vibrations. So it's sending in the sound a different way.
Different way.
Exactly.
So what's the prevalence of that compared to hearing aids?
I would say most people the hearing aid is the best option for them based on their type. But for those that do have that conductive or that mixed hearing loss, the bone anchored device will definitely give them a better quality of sound than a hearing aid would. And we see patients usually prefer that when it is an option.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information, but now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Standing Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 1017 FM and 710 Keel. Now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 1017 FM at 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, Standing Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I'm Gary Kalikas, and I thank you for listening to our show today. Joining me on my radio show as a special guest are Dr. Gauri Mankerkar, who is an ENT physician with the Ochsner Health System, the LSU Health System here in Shreveport, and Ms. Brooke Collins, who is the clinical audiologist with Ochsner LSU Health here in Shreveport. I've asked them to come on our show to discuss hearing loss and the benefits of hearing devices, including implanted hearing devices. So we've already had a good first segment here, and our second segment, we're going to continue this as well. So you talked about treating hearing losses via regular hearing aids, via the bone conduction devices. But I wanted to ask, going back to hearing aids, because I had a lot of guests, a lot of listeners that wanted me to ask you this question. Hopefully they've asked their ENT doctor before they went out and got them, but maybe they didn't. Probably they didn't. They don't want to tell them. Is the publicity about these $199, $69 hearing aids that you get blasted via the email, via Facebook, you name it. So in one words or less, are they worth the money, or are they scams? I haven't heard from anybody that's had these, and I know a lot of people have never commented on how they were good or not.
So there is a time and a place for them. They're not a great fit for everyone. The big difference that we see with this is these over-the-counter hearing aids that you see in the big box stores, typically they're for a more mild hearing loss. The difference between those and prescription hearing aids, which is what I would fit, is that the prescription hearing aids can be programmed exactly to your hearing loss, where the over-the-counter hearing aids are more of just a
shotgun approach. It just takes all the everything.
It's amplifying sound, not as custom for your hearing loss.
Okay. And those are probably unadjustable. You can't customize them. And a lot of them are probably the technology there doesn't last as long. If you drop them, they're probably going to break quite easily.
Sure. And with the prescription hearing aids, you also get a warranty that comes with those. We can repair in office and also send to the manufacturer for repairs.
The other thing, I don't know if you know the coverage, but all my listeners were saying, if you have a Medicare health plan, Advantage plan, there is some coverage for hearing.
There might be. I usually encourage all patients, if they're interested, to call their insurance first and ask if there's a coverage so that they're aware and they can use it if there is.
And hopefully in the near future, I think the Medicare program should be covering this. They cover almost everything else, but the hearing is like secondary child down there, right?
Yeah, I guess when these Medicare, Medicaid programs were first started in the 1960s, people didn't live that long, and hearing and eyes were not part of the Medicare system. But now they really need to go back and revise that policy. Interestingly, many of the insurance companies have started including it. The private insurances have started including hearing loss and reimbursement for hearing aids.
Good.
It may be important for individuals to, when they choose their plan, to look for it and include it when they opt in. Because most of them now have it, the option, but it's included in very fine print at the bottom. And so it may be worthwhile reading the policy before opting
great.
In.
Great. Well, the other follow-up question I have, and both of you can comment, the ones that get prescription hearing aids, and let's say that individual's had it for a couple of years and the patient is deceased. I've heard so many people tell me they toss them in the trash can. Aren't they reprogrammable for anybody?
They are. Don't toss them away. For those situations, I've heard of some patients donating them. You can donate them to family members. We can reprogram them.
So if I may add, we do have a hearing aid bank.
Awesome.
At Ochsner LSU, if anybody has any hearing aids at home from any of their family members who are deceased or not using it, please bring them to
awesome.
Us. We can reprogram them and use them. So we do have a hearing aid bank.
I have never heard of that, and I'm glad. I don't know if all the other hospitals have one or all the hearing. I know that various hearing doctors never mentioned that. I mean, it's amazing. And I think I asked one of them, and, it's up to them what they do with it. And it's, they're pretty expensive in high technology, and I don't see, they're so pro-adjusted, it cares less if it's Gary Kaligas. It could be programmed to Brooke here, right?
Absolutely.
So that's good. I'm glad. I want you to help me promote that. Send me something about that, and I'll put it in our magazine. I think there's thousands being tossed to the trash can.
I agree.
Thousands, and that's sad. People can make use of them,
yes,
and have a more quality care of life. So that's my soapbox on the day. But I'm glad. I'm so proud that you at Ochsner LSU is doing that. Okay. So what happens if the devices don't work? The hearing aids, the bone conductor doesn't help the person to hear. What do we do next?
So at that point, when the devices are not working, hearing aids or a bone-anchored hearing aid, we can start discussing a cochlear implant.
Okay, explain that. That is the most confusing thing that I have yet heard. Many people out there do not understand that. It's an implant, correct?
Correct. So cochlear implant is a bionic ear. It has two parts. The first part is implanted surgically under the skin and into the inner ear, so the electrodes go inside the inner ear. And the second part is placed outside. It attaches via magnet to the internal part, and the outer part can be programmed. And that's done with the audiologist. And once the surgery is done, the patient waits for about 4 weeks, and then the implant can be activated.
So why wait 4 weeks?
Basically for the skin incision to heal.
Oh, okay.
Because there is some soreness, there is some swelling, and so the magnet may not hold well in that period. So we wait approximately 3 weeks to 4 weeks. Once the swelling settles down, they can get it activated.
So is the person's ear remaining, inner ear and all that still there?
The inner ear is still there. It's just that we are, the inner ear is like a snail. So it is hollow on the inside. And so the electrodes are being placed in that little channel.
And that's going to generate the sound for the person to hear?
Yes. So the outside part has a microphone. It brings in the sound. Then it conducts via the magnet to the internal device. And the internal device then passes the electrical energy to these electrodes, which are inside the inner ear, and that stimulates the hearing nerve. And the hearing nerve then passes on the information to the hearing part of the brain. So this is a very interesting device that helps the brain be stimulated with sound and helps the person to understand language.
So the technology of this is in your brain or on the outside?
It's partly on the outside and partly inside the inner ear.
Partly on the inner ear.
Not in the brain. So that's one of the misconceptions.
Yes,
it's
that's what
not in the brain.
Outside of it.
Yes, outside and inside the inner ear.
Wow. So it's a pretty small device, correct?
It's a very tiny device. The inner part that's implanted is very tiny.
Very tiny. Okay. And you do that particular procedure at Ochsner Health?
Yes, we do the surgery at Ochsner LSU.
Wow. So those little devices, are they custom fit for the individual? If a person has a bigger ear or a bigger, are they customized?
So the electrodes can be customized depending on the length of the inner ear, but most are not customized. They are available in a specific length. But yes, if it's a special type of anatomy, they can be customized.
Okay. The other question, if you have hearing loss in one ear, do you have to do both ears with cochlear, one in the other? Both?
So typically we start off by doing surgery in the worst ear.
Okay, the worst ear.
Worst ear. And then after, in case a patient has hearing loss in both ears, we can do in both ears.
Okay. And do the systems coordinate themselves? You have one on one side and one on the other.
It's amazing how the brain is able to coordinate. So if a person has a hearing aid on one side and an implant on the other side, the brain learns to coordinate and see, understand sound as one sound. Similarly, if they have two implants, they still hear it as one sound.
And you mentioned something. I know we've heard the word. Is cochlear the type or the company?
So cochlea is the inner ear, the snail-like structure. Cochlear is actually the device, but the trade name has been taken by one of the vendors who makes the device. There are two other vendors who also make the same device.
But do they call them cochlear implants?
Yes. So the device is called a cochlear implant.
But the other one took the idea of that and patented it.
Yeah, they got a trade name for it. So.
Wow, that was sneaky. But that was probably quite a few years ago as well.
Yes.
So you can do any of them. They're probably all the same, but just a little bit technology difference, correct?
Yes, I think the programming that the audiologists do, that's slightly different. The surgery for all three is the same.
Is the same as well. So what is the process of a person getting a cochlear implant?
So
what's the criteria for?
Yes, so the criteria is any person who does not benefit with a hearing aid. That's the very important criteria. The second criteria is because a team is involved in this whole process. It starts with the physician examining the ear, the audiologist who has to confirm that they will not benefit with the hearing aid, and then the radiologist who has to do the scans, which is a CT scan to check for the anatomy, whether we can actually place the electrodes.
Oh, never thought of that.
And then
there's
MRI.
A possibility that would not be, not could not happen, huh?
Yes, if they have had an ear infection, the cochlea itself may be closed off, and so it may be difficult to place the electrode. An MRI is very important for us to check, especially in children, if there is a nerve present. If the hearing nerve is congenitally absent, the implant may not work. And so we have to go through this whole process before we can inform a person if they are a candidate for a cochlear implant.
Okay, so there's a lot of steps involved before the surgery is done, the implant's done, and so how long does that type of surgery last when you do it, Doc?
So the surgery itself is a day surgery. It takes between 2 to 3 hours for the surgery itself, and the patient can go home the same day.
Pretty awesome. Wow.
They have stitches behind the ear, and usually they are self-dissolving stitches. The pain is not severe. It's about mild pain, and the surgery is done under general anesthesia. Once they have healed, then we hand over the patient to the audiologist for programming the device.
So you said general, so they're completely, you're completely out.
Completely out and sleeping.
I think most patients would like that. That's well, but hey, sometimes the doctor said, no, we can just put you on the sleeping medicine, but I'd like to go completely, don't want to hear what's going on, right? Y'all be chatting behind my back. So the criteria, you have to go through all that, but so you present this, if in case they have insurance, you've got to probably present that to somebody, right?
So these are insurance criteria. We have to meet their criteria that we have to examine the patient. The audiologist has to figure out if the patient can understand words or benefit with a hearing aid. And lastly, the radiology to confirm that the cochlea itself is patent and we can place the electrode. So these are insurance criteria. But the important thing is, depends on the type of insurance. For example, Medicare will cover cochlear implants. Medicaid will not cover cochlear implants for anybody who is over the age of 21. And so children under 21 can get a cochlear implant, but once they reach age 21 in Louisiana, they cannot avail of an implant if they develop a hearing loss after that age. Or if they had an implant before age 21, at age 21, they lose that cover, and so they have to buy parts and everything for themselves.
Mm, that's something. So what's the youngest person that you or other doctors have implanted in a child, cochlear?
Personally, I've operated on a one-year-old. But some of the cochlear implant centers are doing surgeries on six-month-old babies.
Wow, I would never thought that that young of a child would get a cochlear implant. That's amazing. Okay, one other follow-up question. Gary had lots of follow-up. So what happens if the individual has total hearing loss in one of his ear, one of her ear, his ear, total loss? Can that help?
Yes. So those are the patients that we do the cochlear implant
total loss.
Total hearing loss.
Not partial.
So if they are partial, then they would benefit with a hearing aid. And
so we can bring back somebody that has lost completely hearing in one or more ears. Okay.
If they meet all the criteria, then yes, we can
So I think that's
surgery.
A misconception. People thought if they're totally couldn't hear from one or more ears, that they're not a candidate, but they are a candidate.
But they can be, yes, they can be
so
a candidate.
So that can stimulate mm-hmm. that particular...
Yes, the electrodes basically bypass the inner ear hair cells and so stimulate the hearing nerve and help the person to hear.
Wow, that is totally remarkable. Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more information. But now a word from our sponsors and advertisers who do make this radio show possible. You're listening to the Best of Times Radio Hour here on News Radio 710 Keel, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana Neighbors, and in Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer.
The Best of Times Radio Hour will be right back on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel. And now back to the Best of Times Radio Hour on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Welcome back to our show, the Best of Times Radio Hour, proudly presented by AARP Louisiana and A-Bears Town and Country of Shreveport, your Dodge, Chrysler, Ram, and Jeep dealer. I do thank you for taking time to listen to our radio show today. Joining me on my show as special guest is Dr. Gauri Mankirkar, who is an ENT physician with Ochsner LSU Health in Shreveport, and also Ms. Brooke Collins, who is a clinical audiologist with Ochsner LSU Health in Shreveport. And they're discussing hearing loss and the benefit of hearing devices, included implanted hearing devices. So going back to the cochlear process, you know, I think a lot of people hear about it, but are scared about it. What's the success rate? Cochlear implants.
Yes. So cochlear implants can be very successful, but it depends on the individual and the reason for their hearing loss.
Oh.
So it's important to understand that the surgery itself is not as important as the patient themselves.
Really?
They have to work at it. So we typically hear with our brain, but we listen with our ears. And so once the implant is placed, mm-hmm. it's behoves the patient to use the device and start listening with the device.
Okay.
And they have to train their brain to listen with the device.
So it doesn't automatically always on? I don't understand.
So the device is on.
On the time.
But the brain, the part of the brain that hears sound, has to learn the language.
Oh, okay.
So, for example, if a person has had hearing loss for 5 years, they have been using a hearing aid. But when they get the device, they have to start listening to a different type of device. The sound with a cochlear implant is more robotic initially. It doesn't have the inflections, the nuances like the hearing aid has or a normal voice has.
Oh, and didn't know that either.
And so it's important for the person who gets the device to learn the language. And so they have to practice listening. And so one of the things I tell my patients is to listen to radio shows.
Okay.
When you listen to the TV, you are actually listening with your ears, because many patients with long-standing hearing loss start listening with their eyes. They start lip reading.
Oh.
And now you have to activate and stimulate the part of the brain to listen with your ears and that part of the brain.
Excellent, Doc.
And that takes time. It takes a lot of energy. It can be very exhausting. And so many patients give up on it. And so this is where the success of the implant depends, because the patient has to really be motivated to do and listen and work at it. And many of the patients do very well.
Good.
With the implant.
One follow-up question, though. So Brooke over there, every so often you have to reprogram mm-hmm. the cochlear?
Absolutely.
And why is that?
So when we first turn the implant on their activation day, which like Dr. Mankekar said, sometimes it sounds very robotic. Over time, as they get used to hearing through the cochlear implant, they'll need more stimulation because eventually they get ready for it. Over time, we are looking for sounds to be more natural to that patient, and throughout this whole process, we will adjust as needed. We're also doing testing in the sound booth to see how their speech understanding is so we can compare it to before they were implanted with their cochlear implant.
So how do we know it's robotic?
So that's from what the patient tells us.
Okay.
I've had patients say when we first turn it on, things sound robotic. Sometimes they tell me that speech sounds sort of like a cartoon character. So over time, when they're wearing it and doing mm-hmm. those listening exercises at home, eventually we work towards a more natural speech sound.
So that's the progress. That's mm-hmm. why you want to keep practicing and keep exercising.
It's a full process.
Wow. But are there adjustments? I've heard a couple of friends of mine have had it. They've had to go back and forth to get it adjusted for, I don't know what adjustments are needed, but something's needed?
Yeah, there are. So just like you would go and have a hearing aid adjusted and changed if your hearing changes, we will change the stimulation that you're getting for these different electrodes. So I can see exactly how much stimulation I'm giving each electrode in the programming, and I can adjust that and change it based on how you're hearing with the device. So that's like aided testing. So if they're in the booth, I play a certain sound for them and figure out where they're hearing it. And if they're not hearing it at a level I think they need to be hearing it at, I'll give them more stimulation at that sound so that they have more access to it when they wear their cochlear implant. So that, in addition to listening to the patient's report and seeing how they're hearing, do they think it's loud? Do they think it's not loud enough? And I can adjust based on what they're telling me to.
That is high medical technology. So impressed that you can
do all
those type of, in such a small device too, right?
Yes.
Amazingly. So this is a stupid question, but I always ask stupid questions. So I'm thinking what happens if somebody, let's say, had a cochlear device many years ago and now wants the latest, greatest? Is it good for them to do that, to get a re-implant? Is it possible? Is that done?
So usually the internal device is not changed unless it completely fails. But the outside device is upgraded I think every 5 years. Brooke may know better.
Wow, so it is upgraded. Okay.
Yeah, we call it backwards compatibility. So they'll get their implant, but no new processor will not be able to go back and be compatible. So the implant shouldn't have to be changed unless, like Dr. Mankekar said, there's something that happens and there's something that goes wrong with it.
That's good to know. I mean, that means they're improving with technology. Unlike people that have, like me, have cataract and lens implants, I asked my doctor, Shelby, can I get the latest, greatest? Gary, yours working perfect, your eyesight. Why do you want to get the latest? Oh, because I heard it's so cool now, you know, and all that kind of, you just leave what you got. We don't want to have any complications. So that's probably but the cochlear, you can upgrade in a way.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That is
like the electronics change with the telephone, the cell phones. Mm-hmm. So the electronic computer, digital technology in the devices, the external device changes. And so whenever it changes, there are upgrades. And like Brooke said, you can get
it. So is the cochlear like my hearing aid? You can control it from your iPhone and go, you didn't mention that.
You can absolutely connect it. So that's one thing patients love, the connectivity.
Well, I love them with my hearing aids that I can do that. And, I mean, depending on noise, you can increase it. If you're at a rock concert, I can decrease it really well and not even have to worry about it, just like having any earplugs in there, but I can hear perfect music. Let's talk about a couple of minutes here. What's the new and exciting things coming up in hearing technology? Anything new?
So sort of along the lines of connectivity, like we're talking about, there is something in the works called AuraCast. And what that is a transmitter that different large theaters and airports and places like that will have. And the hearing aid technology and cochlear implant technology is coming out so that it will be able to connect to that. So it's different from Bluetooth. So instead of just pairing your cochlear implant or your hearing aids to your cell phone and only hearing that, everyone, for example, in the movie theater that has a hearing device will be able to connect it to this audio source that we're referring to as AuraCast, that's what it's called, so that they can hear the sounds of the conference or the movie or whatever it is, and it's changed based on their hearing needs through their device.
Oh, that's impressive. Any other items? Surgically or technology?
So I think the newer things are, of course, we've been looking at gene therapy for a long time. And
really?
In the last, for the last, I think, 25, 30 years, we've been looking at gene therapy, but it is coming to fruition in the last 1 to 2 years. And recently, two or more centers have used gene therapy to restore hearing in children who were born with hearing loss, but for a specific gene. And so hopefully in the future, there will be more gene therapies for certain other genes.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you again for joining us today. Tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you. Give us a phone number. Uh-oh.
So, well, they can contact us at Ochsner LSU.
Okay.
They can just reach our phone lines to make any appointments and to come to us for the hearing evaluation.
Okay. We want to get you a lot of people that possibly need your services as well. So, again, thank you for educating. I learned a lot about it. I mean, I knew a little bit, but now I know a lot more. Hopefully my listeners out there throughout the Arklatex will learn more about hearing loss and about the ways they can treat it and about cochlear implants. So, again, thank you for joining us today on the Best of Times Radio Hour.
Thank you for inviting us.
Please thank our sponsors and advertisers who support this radio show and our magazine, The Best of Times. Remember, tell your friends to listen to our show next Saturday morning for more information that could benefit them or their loved ones. Don't forget to pick up your personal copy of The Best of Times at one of our 270 distribution locations. May God bless you and your family. God bless America. Have a great day and a great weekend. Thank you again for listening to our show today. And best wishes for a happy Thanksgiving Day and holidays with family and friends. I'm Gary Kaligas wishing you and yours the best of times both today and every day. Have a great day.